I'm Becky Quick of CNBC and your host of The Forum. I'll be guiding you through exclusive conversations about some of the world's global leaders, conversations previously held behind the club doors, but today I invite you in. The Economic Club of New York serves as the premier forum for nonpartisan discussion, dedicated to connecting the world's brightest minds with preeminent public and private sector leaders. A nonprofit 501c3, the club is a 115-year-old platform for the conversations that help shape the future of our world. The Economic Club of New York, brightest minds, critical conversations, catalyst for innovation. Today's episode is on women in leadership. There's so much to say on this topic, but we're focused on some of the challenges for women in leadership and in general that women face in business today. We'll touch on the gender pay gap, changes to the economy, the importance of paid leave, the invisible burden that women face as they juggle multiple roles, and the resulting burnout from all those demands. First, let's address the gender pay gap that's been prevalent in our society for decades. For this, we will hear from our friend across the globe, Elizabeth Moreno. She's the French Minister for Diversity and Equal Opportunities. She discusses strategies that are being implemented in France.
As we began our economic recovery, and states such as France invested massively in strategic sectors, society is at a pivotal moment where investment in the empowerment of women and girls is absolutely critical. And action must be taken now to not only reverse the current disparities, but also to further close the gap. So now, here is the main question. How do we do this? And concretely, we need more women in leadership roles, whether it is in companies, in the public sector, or even in politics. Companies with more women in leadership roles hire more women right across the board. And being aware of unconscious bias and building strong internal pipelines for promotion will improve hiring rates for women in leadership position. But it is not enough. Not yet. This is why back in 2011, France implemented quota that obliged large companies to have at least 40% of their women within their boards, thanks to the Copé-Zimmermann law. And last year, the French Parliament went even further by adopting the Rixen-Castaner law that enforces stronger obligations for large companies to implement quotas in their executive bodies. And equal pay should also be something that we need to question. It should not be a question, it should be a norm. And for this reason, the French government set up the Professional Equality Index in order to close the gender pay gap. And since 2018, companies based in France must objectively measure the pay and status gaps between women and men while identifying levers for action to put an end to these gaps. And these French examples show how, by implementing well-targeted and binding measures, we can actually reduce the pay gap and ensure full equality between women and men within companies.
These are only a few of the efforts that are being made in France that other countries could benefit from mirroring. Motherhood is a major, often unspoken factor that widens the gender pay gap. Let's hear from Elizabeth on solutions to combat this through parental leave.
The main key of women economic empowerment lies within their own home. The gender pay gap is largely due to motherhood, and having children or even marrying in the first place hurts women's salary because it affects men's, because the division of labor at home is still unequal. Some countries are taking great leaps on paternity leave, and I just met with Iceland Prime Minister, who told me about the great policies that Iceland has set up and that show promising results. In France, we tackled this issue by extending the paternity leave, which is of 28 days as of now. And this measure is necessary to allow a fair sharing of family responsibilities and women's economic empowerment, but it is also a measure of equality. Fathers do want to get involved in their newborn child's life, and we must help them to do so. And we aim to give also girls and women the tools to live the life they want to live, and it begins at school. Education is paramount in the fight against stereotypes. It is the only way to fight the self-censorship preventing girls from embracing their dreams. And as Nelson Mandela said, education is the most powerful weapon which we can use to change the world. And there should be no studies or career reserved to boys and to men, or society where we should develop a gender-neutral approach to these questions. To me, equal opportunity has equal choice at its heart. And we need to see more girls embracing scientific and engineering studies and careers. And in the 5 coming years, 1 job out of 3 will have a digital component. We absolutely need to see more girls embracing these STEM, because we need more Ada Lovelace, more Esther Duflo, more Mary Jackson or Jennifer Doudna and Emmanuel Charpentier.
According to Pew Research Center, of the top 41 developed countries in the world, the United States is the only one that does not mandate any paid leave for new parents. The smallest amount of paid leave required in any of the other 40 nations is about 2 months. In comparison, Estonia offers more than a year and a half of paid leave to new parents, the highest benefit provided. A number of countries, Bulgaria, Hungary, Japan, Lithuania, Austria, Slovakia, Latvia, Norway, and Slovenia offer over a year's worth of paid leave as well. This is according to data that was compiled by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. While paid leave is dominated by leave for mothers, paid leave specifically for fathers is also available in 34 of the 41 countries. It should be noted that while the U.S. is the only country that does not have a national paid leave mandate, 13 states and the District of Columbia have state-mandated paid leaves in place, at least as of January 2023. Let's move on to the economy. While economic downturns don't only affect women, Sarah Wilshaw, the Chief Trade Commissioner and Assistant Deputy Minister of Global Affairs in Canada, talks about how to help women in recovery efforts and what an inclusive economic recovery looks like in her country.
An inclusive recovery, we know, is a feminist recovery. And so our last budget included support for women across the economy, women entrepreneurs, women who work in low-wage jobs, women in skilled trades, women in the financial sector. And the goal is to build a recovery that is an economic recovery that is inclusive and addresses systemic issues so that our future economy is stronger and better able to withstand shocks. But also because businesses all across the Western world are in need of labor. They keep telling us this. And why would we leave half the team on the bench? Why would we leave any of the team on the bench is my question. We've got a $30 billion investment over the next 5 years in Canada-wide early learning and childcare plan, providing permanent ongoing funding after that. And this is designed to reduce fees for parents with children in regulated childcare by 50% on average. The goal is to reach $10 a day childcare by 2026. We also have paid maternity and paternity leave, and the minister is right. This has made an enormous difference. We're also strengthening the women entrepreneurship strategy with nearly $150 million to provide greater access, as you mentioned, Rachna, to financing, to mentorship, to training for women entrepreneurs. And we know that that is what is needed most. We're investing $22 million to provide tools, services, and resources to increase the number of Indigenous women entrepreneurs as well.
Beyond many women's roles in the workplace is their second role as a caretaker, whether for children, family members, or others in the community. Elizabeth Moreno weighs in on how this can be taken into account while providing women with the opportunities they need to get ahead.
You know, if we do not have women taking care of the kids, taking care of anybody or the elders and so on and so forth, we would be in very difficult situation. That said, these jobs are not the most considered, the most respected, the most paid. And I really think that it is important to pay attention to those sectors where women are overrepresented, such as the hospital sector, where they were on the front during on the front line during the crisis. And that's the reason why our government has increased the salary of caregivers and midwives, for instance, just to make sure that we show them that we care and we realize how important their roles are. And, you know, I tend to believe that giving women the chance to to have access to the right job, to have access to the right salary, is a way to free them for any violence or any injustice or discrimination. And I think it is more than time now to give women the place they deserve in the economic environment, not by pity, but just because we need them to bring their contribution. They are ready to do so. And it is time to find a way in this very tormented world where so many things need to be built. I think this balance between men and women is more than needed. And we won't rebuild back this world without women. That's for sure.
Thea Lee, who's the Department of Labor Deputy Undersecretary for International Affairs, echoes a similar sentiment, offering solutions for how to move our economy forward if and when another crisis hits.
And I think if we take away our lesson from the pandemic, which has been so traumatic, so isolating, so tragic in so many ways, but if we learn the lessons of the pandemic, which is that we need some structural change in our economy if we're going to be resilient and robust for the next crisis that hits us, whether it's a climate crisis or another pandemic or an economic downfall, but that things like paid leave and decent work and worker protections and worker voice are good not just for working people, but they're good for business. They're good for the economy. They're good for men. They're good for women. They're good for everybody. And so that's, to me, what I really hope we can take away. And also, you know, just in today's talk about the important role that business has in helping to address the challenges and inequities that women face in labor markets around the world, both in terms of their own internal decisions, but also how they engage in the world.
It's an excellent point and one that should be remembered. Paid leave isn't just good for women, it's good for men, for businesses, and for the economy. Beyond the financial ramifications felt by many women in leadership roles, there is another consideration: burnout. Lorena Yee, who is senior partner at McKinsey & Company, shares some insights on what causes frequent burnout and what can be done to combat it.
So let's calibrate where we are. So when we looked at burnout last year, we looked at burnout this year. We saw that 42% of women said that they're experiencing high to extreme levels of burnout. And your question is, so why is that happening? What's driving that? Well, there are a couple of things. One is, when you think about, you know, put in mind the average manager, female manager, she runs basically a triple shift. Her first shift is her job itself. And what we saw in corporate America is we didn't see a drop, a beat missed in terms of results. So she's delivering her results each and every day. Her second shift is the fact that she's also doing more office housework. She's taking more time to check in on teams, more time to rebalance, more time to help. She's checking in on mental health, and she's participating more in diversity and inclusion. By the way, that's unpaid and unrecognized work. Then her third shift is if she has kids, she goes home and she does a disproportionate amount of housework. And when we thought about and when we've measured how much is that home shift, it's on average 3 hours a day. So if you add that up, it's a job and a half plus everything you're doing. By all respects, just on that alone, you can imagine that it's not surprising that women are feeling exhausted.
So when are women pushed beyond their limits? Yee provides some insights and thoughts as to what companies should be looking out for before it's too late.
We asked women, are you thinking about stepping back or stepping out? 1 out of 3 said they are having that consideration. What's fascinating is, I don't think it's yet the great attrition. It's more a great pause or a great reflection. So what you see is women in corporate America are saying, wait a second, given all of this, do I want to run at this company and or do I want to run at this pace? What we don't see in the data is mass exodus. So what we worried about was, if all those women took action on that and exited, you would see about 2 million women leave corporate America. That has not happened. So that's good news. But the bad news is that they're still thinking about it. So if you want to talk about silver linings for companies, the opportunity is, if they haven't acted on it and it's very obviously a risk, what can you do to mitigate that risk and actually retain the women that you have?
Would you like to be part of the conversation at the Economic Club of New York? Learn more about membership, the New York City and National Fellows programs, and other opportunities for engagement in the club at www.econclubny.org. in order to create more women in leadership, addressing the inequalities they face as they move to advance their careers is paramount. Lorena Yee addresses what she considers the broken rung.
The broken rung is the fact that what we found is we start to lose women at that very first promotion. So for every 100 men that receive their first promotion from entry level to that first time you get that uptick, right? That first, very first opportunity, for every 100 men, only 85 women receive that same thing. And we test this year over year, and that number stays stable. And if you're a woman of color, that number this year was 79%. So for every single person that goes up, for every male, there are less women. And that inequity at the very beginning just expands over time. So even if you accelerate promotions and you have parity at the VP level, you've already lost a lot of women.
And unfortunately, this experience is even more difficult for women of color in leadership positions.
So for women of color, the experience is more extreme. And so all the things that you see for women with respect to men, just imagine a more extreme thing. And then your question is, so why is that happening? What's different about the experience of women of color? And one of the sort of the two major things that we see that are very different is the experience of more enhanced microaggressions. So up to 2 to 3 times more likely than women overall.
What could companies be doing more systemically to help women, and particularly women of color? Let's hear Lorena's three things to consider.
Three things for folks to think about. The first thing is, one of the things that companies tend to do very well is to think about the quality of their promotion practices at the top. There's a reason why we're starting to see more women at the top. And a very, very simple thing to do is to take those practices and pull them all the way through your organization to the very front line. And what we often see is that there's great data transparency, there's anti-bias training, there's all these ways in which there's wider sourcing at the very top, but those practices aren't related to the very beginning. So one is just to use your own best practices. The second thing is, you know, what is the power of allyship? And we've talked a lot about allyship, and I think of it as a trio. You want to be a mentor, you want to be a sponsor, you want to be an ally. And the thing about allyship is, when we look at the experience of Black women, we compared Black women with allies, Black women without allies. And what we saw is, for all those microaggression stuff that I mentioned to you, for Black women with allies, their experiences were closer almost exactly to white women. Black women without allies, they were like half or even a third of that experience. And so what we see is that the basic act of allyship makes a huge difference. And that's an everyday action. You don't need to be the CEO. You don't need to be the head of the group. You can be anyone in a company and stand up for others who are different than you. The last thing I would just say really quickly is that part of this also is managers. And so one of the questions I often ask companies is, how are you empowering your frontline, first line managers to be, you know, for this to be part of what makes them successful? And this is, I think, where a lot of companies struggle, which is this sense of consistency between what you say and what you do. Because if I say, CEOs, how many of you care? They all raise their hand and they mean it, like authentically mean it. But then how do you cascade that all the way down so that the everyday experience of women is consistent with that aspiration?
Those are powerful considerations to end on. A key takeaway from this episode is that aspirations for change can't come to fruition without action and consistency. Favorable and fair circumstances for all employed women not only benefits women, it benefits all citizens and the economy. We owe this to ourselves and to future generations. You've been listening to The Forum by the Economic Club of New York, a nonprofit 501c3 dedicated to connecting the world's brightest minds for critical, nonpartisan conversations. Be sure to subscribe now to be alerted to future new episodes. Would you like to be a part of the conversation at the Economic Club of New York? Learn more about membership, the NYC and National Fellows programs, and other opportunities for engagement in the club at www.econclubny.org. I'm your host, Becky Quick. Thanks for listening.